Hello and welcome to episode 81 of Speak Beastie for February 24th, 2019. I'm Amy.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Megan.
Ladies, happy Galentine's Day.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Well, by the time this comes out, it'll be like February 24th. So that'll be over. But in the spirit of friendship, happy Galentine's Day or Palentine's Day to all of our listeners.
Ooh, retroactively. I like that, Palentine's. I like that.
I read it somewhere. I can't take credit for it, but I don't remember where I read it. So,
yes, we hope you all had a wonderful Galentine's, Palentine's, Valentine's.
Very much. And today, the day the episode comes out, is Oscar Sunday.
Oh, no.
Which is super exciting because nothing about this movie is nominated. But I saw Bohemian Rhapsody and it blew my mind. So I'm excited about that.
It was a fantastic film. I said it. I didn't mean to say it.
TM.
I still have not seen it, so I have to see it.
But... What? Oh, you have to see it. It's so good.
I've heard very mixed reviews, so yeah.
I did too, so I wasn't sure what to expect going in, and I think that actually helped me.
Mm. I usually like movies that no one else likes, so...
Okay, well...
I probably would like it. I don't know.
Is the Oscars still no host?
Yep, they're going hostless this year.
All right.
Well, that's interesting.
And I was reading that the last time that happened was 1989, and it was a shit show. Sorry, Catherine, you had to bleep that. But I kind of like the bleeping noise, so I may have done it on purpose.
How would that even work? Like, how would they get on to the next thing? That doesn't make sense to me.
They just have, like, those awkward pairs of actors that walk out just the whole time. They just
it's awkward
pass it
enough
off to each
when
other.
They're introduced.
I know.
Like, imagine when they're uninvited.
It's gonna be.
There.
It's gonna be something to watch.
Oh. Oh no!
I'm excited.
Maybe you guys should just listen to this show instead.
Yes.
Just forget about it. You know.
Because we're notoriously put together, and
yeah, exactly.
I never say swear words when I shouldn't.
We never mess up our lines.
No. What?
And we can definitely always read the information in front of us. Hold on, I need to zoom this in a lot. Woo! 150%. Much better.
There you go. So news.
Yes, the news. Okay. And now for the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
So, a new interview came out with Dan Fogler from Hey You Guys, and he basically addresses the whole conversation about the third film being pushed back, you know, why, where they're going, etc. He gives a tiny bit of information and then basically just deflects the rest of it. So the two big quotes. The reason we were given is that the movie is bigger than the first two combined. They needed more time to prep and they didn't want to rush anything, so they pushed it back. So do you feel that he's lying?
I don't think this is implying anything about runtime. I think he's maybe talking about the scale, like where the story's going, and visually, and preparing sets and special effects and all of that. I think there's going to be more action, if that's possible, than Crimes of Grindelwald. So I see it being a lot of logistics and, hey, how are we going to make this work? How are we going to stage this? And I think that's what he's talking about more.
I mean, I agree. And if that's the truth, I have mixed feelings about it. Because on the one side, I'm like, oh, that's great. You guys are going to just keep going and you're not going to worry about what the number said and you're not going to worry about what the people said and you're just going to keep going. Like, I really admire your effort and your confidence and just pushing through. But on the other hand, I'm like, are you guys not listening?
Right?
Like, there are just two versions where I'm like, oh, no, if you go bigger and it flops more, like, you know, like how painful a belly flop is?
Yeah.
It's like they just, so this one, they just jumped into the pool, right? And they just flopped. That's fine.
Would you call it a flop, though? Like, I know we talked about the numbers not being as good as the other Harry Potter films or the first Fantastic Beasts film, but, like, it still made money.
Oh, no. I am in no way trying to imply that I think the movie in itself was a flop. I was more just trying to illustrate that based on how the reviews came out, I visualize it as someone jumping into a pool and belly flopping and it hurts a little bit.
Definitely smarts.
And now they're like, we're just going to keep going. That didn't hurt so much. So they're going to climb to like the top of the ladder, the jumping pad thing. What is that called?
The diving board?
Thank you. Dipping to the top of the diving board, and they're going to belly flop from there. And, you know, it's going to hurt more if it doesn't go well.
Or it could be a spectacular, beautiful landing.
Yeah, or maybe they dive, and maybe, and you know what? Even diving is not the right word here, but, you know, like a beautiful execution with,
graceful.
Like, a complete Ariel Little Mermaid hair flip on the reentry.
I don't think this means anything. I think that they said, hey guys, you're probably going to get asked in interviews why we push this movie back, and here's what you say. Because it's vague enough that it has plausible deniability, which means if somebody tries to call us out for it later, we can be like, oh, well, we meant XYZ by that. Like, you can fit this into any definition. The movie is bigger than the first two combined. Bigger is a vague enough word that, like, you don't know what that means. Could mean runtime, could mean budget, could mean any number of things. So,
could mean character.
I just feel like it's BS, kind of. Like, it's what they're going to say until
they figure out what they're doing.
Until they figure out what their actual press angle is with this film.
Yeah.
Could very well be.
And Amy, you're in the media, so you could tell me probably more than I know about this, but... Yeah. That's just kind of how it felt to me.
Yeah, no, I could see that. I mean, it's very... And we've seen that in the past with this franchise as well. Especially with how Dan Fogler is prepped on things. I mean, like, he's done this in other interviews, too. Like,
yeah.
In regards to Jacob's character... And what he can and can't say, and he does work his way around it. So, I mean, it very well could be one of those things. I mean, you're right. When a politician is dodging your questions, they use these sort of vague words that could really have several definitions. And, yeah. So.
Which you know from personal experience of, like, today, for instance.
Oh, good lord. Don't even get me going.
Bonus episode where Amy talks about her day at work. I think it'd be fun, personally.
I could get in a lot of trouble.
Okay, well, we're
if
not
I just
doing that,
unleashed
then.
What I actually think, I think I might get fired.
Well, we don't want that.
So let's not.
But what else did Dan say in this interview?
Yeah. The second quote of importance. I can tell you we are going to Brazil. I don't really know much. I'll get a script closer to when we start shooting. So there it is. It's Brazil, just as we suspected and have been talking about for the past couple of episodes, but at least it's now out there.
Did we not know before that it was Brazil? Like, is this the confirmation, or was it confirmed earlier? I can't remember.
I feel like, didn't JK confirm it on Twitter?
I don't know if she said, yes, Fantastic Beasts 3 is in Brazil, but somebody was like, hey, your cover photo, is that Brazil? She was like, yeah, Brazil 1930s.
Okay. So it was implied, but this is like our actual confirmation.
Yeah. Which, again, I mean, we suspected because of... Because
there's a wizarding school.
Wizarding school, yeah. Wizarding school location, so... Yeah.
There's a beautiful, beautiful poster promoting Wizarding World travel to Brazil in the new Globus Mundi store in the Wizarding World of Harry Potter at Universal Orlando. Will you please sell those so I can have them? Thank you. Bye.
I want one.
And the New York one. Thank you very much.
The Canada one. All of them.
We have a lot of demands.
Yes.
Yes.
This is not a surprise. This is not new.
No.
But for more information from that interview, you can always check out MuggleNet. And then there was an additional interview that he did where he really talked about his newfound, enjoyment being in the wizarding and the zombie apocalypse world. For those that are unaware, he also has had a recurring role in The Walking Dead. He's also been on episodes of The Goldbergs. So he's really just adjusting to that newfound fame where he gets to dip into a bunch of different categories, which I think is very exciting for...
Yes.
You wouldn't necessarily consider him like a young actor, so to speak, but, you know, because he has a freaking Tony, which I always have to remind myself. But, you know, really getting into this career and, you know, having the sitcom and then a film series and then also the super gory AMC stuff.
I'm sorry, but your caption for this just made me chuckle. This other interview with Dan that doesn't really say anything. I mean,
there's no Fantastic Beasts news in it. It's a very nice interview. He talks about like how he feels about being in these big franchises like Fantastic Beasts and The Walking Dead. And obviously, like any interview with him is going to be great because he's a hilarious dude. But yep. it for the purposes of the Phoenix Register, I was like, there's nothing here. So,
but for all of you Dan Fogler fanatics that want to know anything and everything about our favorite pastry chef, you can always find that article on MuggleNet. And I think that really, you know, wraps things up with the Phoenix Register. So,
yeah,
it's time to move on to the Owl Post. So, last week's podcast question was, how do you think the Goldstein sisters' relationship will change? And we want to thank our fan Sophie for writing in. I don't really think the relationship between Tina and Queenie is that different now. I could easily see Tina running into Nurmgard up to Queenie and just be like, quote, it's cold here and you forgot your scarf. Okay, bye, unquote. What I mean is I don't think they love each other any less or don't care for the other anymore. The way the second movie treated them was horrible, considering how much we learned about their bond in the first film. But maybe that's exactly why we didn't see them in Crimes of Grindelwald together, because we already know. Even if Queenie ripped the postcard from Tina apart, we still know she loves her sister. Tina is still the first one she wants to go to when everything is falling apart. And no doubt, Tina would have greeted Queenie with open arms if she had known she was in Paris. I bet in the next movie we see Tina either blaming herself or trying to prove that Queenie didn't go on her own. Tina will be the last person to blame Queenie for anything. And I hope we see Queenie snapping out of it once she's confronted with Tina on the other side. I just really hope that this wasn't the end of such a beautiful sibling relationship. justice for the Goldsteins.
Well said.
Yeah, I agree. I can really see Tina kind of taking full responsibility for how things turned out and feeling really awful about it, which is sad because it's not her fault.
Yeah, but sibling guilt is so real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Listeners, here's a quick story time, but nothing too personal, I promise. I have a younger sister. She recently turned 18, so she's now a legal adult, and it is quite horrifying to have your younger sister that's like your, essentially your baby sister, all of a sudden become an adult that can do literally anything they want. I mean, not everything, but a lot of things.
Most things.
Yeah, a lot of things they could not do before. And she stresses me out to no end. And anytime she gets into any kind of trouble or something seems to be going, you know, off the fritz, I always find myself feeling guilt and wondering, is it because I don't live at home anymore? Is it because I don't call her enough? Does she need me? Am I a bad sister for not, like, getting involved? Do I need to let her figure it out? So that sibling guilt is so real.
Especially, like, I feel like you, I mean, I don't want to project things onto you, but, like, the Goldstein situation is that Tina really raised her younger sister because her parents, like, unfortunately died. And I know that you still have your parents, but I feel like you were kind of like a role model to your sister growing up. So I feel like that even puts more pressure on the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our father is not the best role model, and that happens in a lot of families, whether that, you know, which figure that is, or it could be anyone in your family relationship that you really hope you have someone to look up to. And when they let you down, it's something very hard to stomach. So to have that loss of, you know, like a figure to, you know, really push on when you need help is always difficult. But like, still, every time my sister does something really stupid, and she's done so many stupid things, and I am so comforted that she will never listen to this. Literally will never listen to this podcast, so I'm totally safe. But I, like, anytime anything happens to her, no matter how stupid it is, I'm, like, ready to catch the subway and get myself over there. I don't know how. Like,
yeah.
I'll run. I will not run, but because I would pass out, but I would figure out a way to figure it out, even if it's something I really disagree with, because at the end of the day, I just want my sister to have a good life, and I'm sure Tina and Queenie feel the same. You know, if they maybe had been able to have a conversation, we would have heard a little bit more about that, but...
Not bitter.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, I mean, those sibling bonds are something else. And even if, you know, your sister joined the wizard Nazis, you wouldn't necessarily stop loving her. You would be incredibly disappointed in her choices.
Incredibly.
And do your best to, like, try to revert that. But, you know, I don't think that you ever stop loving someone and stop wanting the best for them, even in those situations. But this is, like, a pretty extreme example. Like, the worst thing my little sister's ever done is, like, I don't know, underage drinking. Like, normal stuff. This is pretty, you know, out there.
Right. Because...
But I think that Sophie's point is very valid in that, like, that relationship's not going to just fizzle out because of a disagreement, because of that sibling bond. It's not like it's a friend that you disagree with. That's your sister.
I would be really disappointed, though, if when we do get the two of them back together, there is no conversation and it just automatically jumps back into to before.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's still hurt and there's still pain. And if we want this to be treated like a proper relationship, you know, we have to accept the bad with the good.
Right. And we already missed the situation in the conversation that put them in this argument at the beginning of this film. So it's like, how much are we going to keep missing with them? Like, I don't want to lose, like, the relationship's poignancy,
yeah.
I guess, due to a lot of skipping around. I want to make sure that there's still that substance there and enough that we get to see that development and it's not just something we're expected to know exists without actually getting to see it.
Well, and it's like Shannon said a few episodes back, that Queenie has definitely crossed a moral event horizon here, mm-hmm. in that, like, mm-hmm. this is an event that she can't come back from without significant, like, trying to make up for what she's done. Like, there's not going to be any way for these characters to forgive her unless she does something dramatic, because what mm-hmm. she did was that big of a deal.
Right.
So, yeah, justice for the Goldsteins.
Yeah, and hey, listen, at WB, there's always room for flashback scenes. Always room.
Just as long as you keep everyone in the proper timeline.
Right, right, right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, please. Well, thank you, Sophie, for writing in. We always love getting our visitors from our owls. But I think that's also going to wrap up the owl post.
Bye, owls.
Bye.
So, for main discussion today, I thought we would talk about the power of words. And more importantly, specific words that keep cropping up in the Wizarding World universe, both between Fantastic Beasts and Harry Potter, that characters react very strongly to, and what those words mean, and how they shape the stories, and what we should take from them. So, to start off, I would like to quote one of my favorite characters. Actually, this is a movie quote and not a book quote, which is, like, almost sacrilegious in a way. Like, this is one of...
But it's such a good...
It's one of my favorite quotes, but it's a movie quote and it doesn't appear in the books. And I think this is the only one you'll get me to say is, like, one of my favorites from...
I think there should be an edit and maybe they should reissue the books with this quote.
Yes. So, to quote our friend Albus, words, in my not-so-humble opinion, are our most inexhaustible source of magic, capable of both inflicting injury and remedying it. And we see that a lot. In both Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts, people inflict injury on each other via words all the time. So I think that is a good place to start our discussion, just how people use those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when we were discussing this, I was thinking, you know, using words as labels or insults, in some cases it shows irony. Like when a character doesn't match that word and it really doesn't describe them. Kind of like, I know you're going to get into this more, but like when Snape or Jacob are being called cowards, or it can cause damage and push a character over the edge, ultimately, ending up with them living up to the word, i.e. Queenie being called crazy.
Yes. So those are actually the two words that I want to focus on. And my idea for this discussion came from when I was watching Fantastic Beasts, I think for the second time, I noticed that Queenie in that end scene in the weird little amphitheater, where everyone's becoming evil, she tells Jacob that he's a coward. And that really struck me as a parallel to the Harry Potter universe, specifically Half-Blood Prince, when Harry calls Snape a coward and he flips out and says, "Don't call me coward." And I was like, okay, obviously, like, the same woman wrote this, but that has to be a recurring theme for a reason. So that's something I really want to focus on. And same with Queenie being called crazy, because that seems to be the thing that really pushes her over the edge into, like, F it, I'm joining the dark side. Like, I'm making this extreme decision. And not that it was based on that sentiment alone, but that was what really drove her to do that.
Ironically, I was listening to another Potter podcast earlier, and it was focusing on the chapter in Deathly Hallows when Remus comes up to Harry and the squad and basically offers to
the squad
go go camping with them. Mm-hmm. And I had completely forgotten that this language was used because Harry calls Remus a coward.
Oh, yeah.
In this...
Come on, Harry, throwing around that word.
Jeez. When Remus is like, oh, you know, Tonks is going to have a baby. And then he's just like, so am I in? Are we good? And he's just like, no. And there's the whole conversation about what James would have wanted. And Harry says the quote, I can't believe the person who taught me to defend myself against Dementors would be such a coward.
Yeah.
So, and in that way, it definitely pushes Lupin over the edge. But in a way, it pushes him to go back home.
Yeah.
So there's like this, there's definitely something about this word, and it definitely pushes people, but sometimes it pushes in a good way.
That's interesting.
Which I will bring up in a thought that I'm currently forming as we get more into discussion on the Queenie Jacob parallel. But I had to throw that one in there because it had completely escaped my mind that there was an instance where the word coward was thrown around and it ended up being a good reset rather than a negative.
I'm glad you brought that up because I had completely forgotten about that.
Yeah.
But my thought was that Harry calls Snape a coward, and Snape, like, you know, obviously he's prone to yelling at Harry, but he completely just goes off the edge. The description of him in that paragraph is that, like, his face gets white, his eyes are bulging, and he says, don't call me coward. And we later find out, obviously, that he's upset because he's literally risking his life on a daily basis to protect Harry, and yet Harry's calling him a coward.
I would like to quote my good friend Glinda in this moment and say, quote, why couldn't you have just stayed calm for once instead of flying off the handle?
Nice.
At Snape.
At Snape, yes. So my question for you guys is, do you feel like the same is true here for Jacob? Do you feel like he reacts strongly to being called a coward and that he retaliates by calling Queenie a name? So it obviously affects him. But do you feel like he's reacting that way because he's risking his life to be with Queenie? Or maybe some other reason?
Yeah. I mean, when we look at Jacob, he's... In the first instance, when he doesn't call her crazy, but thinks it, he is actually saying, basically, look, I'm trying to protect you, because he doesn't want her to end up in prison or punished for being with him. And then again, when we see them in that weird little amphitheater thing, it's like, who has that below their grave? I don't know. Again, he's in this situation where he's the most vulnerable person in the room. He's the only one without a wand in this place packed with people who are obviously tensions are rising and things are getting violent. So he's risking his own neck, but he's there with Queenie because he's trying to get her out.
If I had been in Jacob's position, I mean, I think I would have done the exact same thing where I would have froze, because in that instance, I would have been a coward. Like, I just would not have been able, I don't think I would have been able to handle anything else. And I personally just don't think it was the right word choice or fair for Queenie to throw that word at him. Because, look at how brave he is being for where he was.
He has no way to defend himself, or her, for that matter, if something happens.
Do you feel like he's there partially for Newt, or do you feel like it's all Queenie? Because he definitely showed up in that situation for Queenie. Like, the whole reason he went to Europe was because he was trying to find her.
Yeah.
Well, he saw her in Flamel's little globe thing.
That's right. Ball thing.
So, yeah, he went to the graveyard for her.
I really need to see this movie again. When does it come out?
Right?
Apparently on digital in a month.
Okay, good.
Ah, yay.
I felt like the people who keep being called cowards in this world are the ones who are actually being the bravest.
Yes.
And I find that really interesting. Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's very, I feel like sometimes it can be very easy to misconstrue what's being brave and what's cowardly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people can disagree on it as well.
Right. Because they're two opposites of the spectrum. Like, I could do one thing right. and Amy could say that I was really brave and Megan could tell me that I was an effing idiot and a coward for that.
Well, I mean, look at the Snape debate, right? There's people who really do say he was just a coward the whole time and he wasn't doing this out of bravery or anything. But then there's people who see it as he is brave, risking his life.
Are there any other similarities between Jacob and Snape? I mean, I feel like they're really different characters, but that word being used against mm-hmm. both of them makes me feel like maybe they're... arcs are going to be kind of similar. I don't know.
I mean, they're similar in the way that they're both... The word coward is thrown at them in situations when they're trying to protect the person that they love. I mean, Snape is protecting Harry, but in his mind, he's protecting Lily.
Right.
I mean, it's... You know, he doesn't see Harry as Harry. He sees him as her son.
Just kind of creepy to think about, so just don't, because I started to, and it was not good.
We'll just stop that right there.
I'm trying to think if there are more similarities. I mean, they're both involved with worlds that are not their own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Snape grew up down the road from the Evans, so he was still in, like, somewhat of a Muggle community growing up, you know? He had that familiarity where he couldn't always be, I guess, his true self, you know, when he was hanging around around Petunia. I mean, he did it anyway. Not like he should have, but, you know, where Jacob finds himself in a completely different world than he is. And they both don't know how to behave when they're in those other worlds because they don't know the rules of the society.
Yeah, I guess... They're both kind of acting the part in two different worlds. Like, Snape's being Voldemort's world and Dumbledore's world. Like, he's having to really portray an identity in both of those worlds. And the same is kind of true for Jacob. Like, he has to portray that he's a normal Muggle guy, but at the same time, he has to interact with these wizards and act like he knows what's going on and not draw attention to himself. So, like, they're both kind of double agents, but in very different ways.
Yeah.
I'm very curious to see what Jacob's path looks like moving forward without Queenie. Or at least until Queenie is reintroduced and they're both back together on screen. Because in the case of, like I mentioned with Lupin, that Harry calling him a coward forced him to reevaluate and figure out what was important and... make him, you know, stop being a coward and really step up. And I'm curious if Jacob is going to have the Lupin approach or the Snape approach to it. Is Jacob going to really stand up and figure out a way and really be there for the rest of the team and figure out how he can defend himself without magic, etc.? Or is he going to take the Snape route where, you know, the woman he loves basically kind of told him she thinks he's scum. And is he going to get angry about it? So it's going to be very interesting to see which way it goes.
Yeah.
I think he would take the Lupin route. Just because I feel like Jacob, throughout this series, I mean, yes, he has such a special friendship with Newt, but I think such a driving force behind his character is Queenie. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he's really, like, gonna have to be on that path of trying to get her back. Because I don't see him just, like, not fighting for her. Like, I think that's just not who he is. So I do think he would probably just throw himself all in.
But at this point, she's, like, openly kind of rejected him.
Right. Yeah. I was going to say, like he doesn't have to. He could walk away if he really wanted to. I don't think he will.
But that would be a huge detriment to the franchise.
Oh,
so.
I agree. And Dan's got contracts, so it's fine.
Now that would be a belly flop.
But I could also see Jacob being really hurt from this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, needing, like, some coaching from Newt to bring him back.
I will just say that I hope that Jacob doesn't end up ending the same way that Snape did, because I would not be okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like when it comes to the word coward, like, it only holds a negative connotation.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a positive way to look at that word, and when it's used, especially about you, towards you, it really does something.
Yeah.
And it really does mess with you.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anyone ever wants to be considered a coward.
I do.
That's just...
Just kidding. Just write it on my birthday card.
Oh my gosh. That's it, everyone.
Right, Megan.
Once I open up that PO box for Megan Kelly, you can send all your fake WB threats to her. And now you can send birthday cards that say HBD to my fave coward, MK.
It's going to be really hard not to make that the episode title. So I feel like when you say that there's no good way to be called a coward, the same is kind of true for the word crazy, which is what Queenie keeps reacting to. And obviously, like, I feel like if somebody calls you crazy, especially somebody that you really care about, you're going to react to it. But she really, I mean, she joined the wizard Nazis because of this. Not fully because of this, but you know what I mean. Like, that was the thing that made her do it. So, coward is, like, it's a pretty obvious word. Like, everyone knows what it means. Somebody who's, like, a wimp. Crazy is a little bit more vague, I think, because it's been used in different ways. So, Webster defines crazy as, 1, mentally deranged, especially as manifested in a wild or aggressive way. Or 2, extremely enthusiastic. Those are
two very different things.
Yeah. And then just for fun, I went a step further and looked it up in Urban Dictionary.
Oh, there we go.
And it says, someone who is wild and fun. Someone who will go against the rules. Someone who does what they want, no matter the consequences. Someone who will do anything, especially for love. It literally said that. I didn't make that up.
Wow.
But I think it's interesting that this word has so many definitions, from like a very insulting, demeaning definition to like, you're just really fun and you're romantic. Like, that is the range of what we're looking at here. And I think it's important to note that generally people get offended if you call them crazy, because it's kind of just a way to dismiss how they're feeling. Especially people with like anxiety or any other kind of mental illness, they're usually not actually mentally deranged, as the definition would suggest. But it's a way for you, as the person who are using the word crazy, to kind of shrug off the burden of empathy and just kind of dismiss their feelings rather than actually dealing with what they're going through. And then I was looking up articles about, like, mental health, and especially as related to the word crazy. And I got into the territory of, like, mental health stigmas. And I found a really cool quote from Michelle Obama, which says, "At the root of this dilemma is the way we view mental health in this country. Whether an illness affects your heart, your leg, or your brain, it's still an illness, and there should be no distinction." So that's kind of a lot to unpack, but basically the word crazy can apply to a whole range of things, but when used in the specific instance of like mental health stigmas / what Queenie's going through, it's an issue.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because when you think about it, used in that way with mental health. You know, there's that whole issue of when you use a mental health disorder to describe a person, it kind of diminishes them down to just the disease. Mm-hmm. Instead of a person with like 10,000 other traits as well as the disease. So it's kind of like when Jacob called Queenie crazy, it was as if everything else about her just kind of was washed away. Mm-hmm. And she actually did become just that. It's like, I mean, from that point on, like everything else about her character that we've come to know, I mean, it was just gone. She wasn't like the normal Queenie, the happy-go-lucky, caring, smart, warm sister.
Yeah.
Like, she just wasn't any of those things anymore. She was just, like, completely, like, off the hinges.
And I feel like it's probably a lot like when somebody you care about or who you trust a lot points out, like, the one thing about you that you're the most insecure about. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of, like, overreact to it because you sort of trust that person to not think that way. And to, like, you believe them to be focused on your more positive traits. And then right. If they pull out that negative one, it's like, oh my God.
Right. Yeah. And it kind of makes me wonder, you know, being born a Legilimens, like, that's not a usual thing, even by wizarding standards. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, what did she go through growing up? Were there people who maybe called her a freak or crazy while she was growing up because of that? We don't really know that, but, I mean, it could be. So she could be hypersensitive to that kind of wording.
I also think that if you can, like, honestly, my worst nightmare would be to be able to hear everyone's thoughts about me. Because it's bad enough just imagining what those might be, but to actually hear them and have proof that people are making judgments about you. Like, sign me up for 100 years of therapy. Like, that is so much to deal with. I can't even. So I feel like if people are thinking that, even if they're not saying it to her, that's something that she can hear and, like, internalize. So I feel like, you know, the person she trusts to love her saying this is probably just like icing on the cake.
Right. And it was bad enough when he thought it, but then when he thought it and formed the word, even after he knew how much it hurt her mm-hmm. the first time when she just heard his thoughts, you know, it was very like you are crazy.
I never even put that together. I wrote this whole discussion and I never even put that together. The first time... when they're, like, standing in the street, he mm-hmm. thinks it, and she hears it. Mm-hmm. The second time, when they're in the amphitheater, he actually says it.
Right. Yeah.
That just blew my mind for a second, so.
Which makes it...
worse.
In my mind, yeah, way worse, because he actually is very, very intentional.
Yeah.
Like, I know this word is going to get to you.
It's going to inflict
harm. So I'm
going to
say it. Yeah.
The thing that's hard is once you put it out there, you cannot really go back.
Mm-hmm.
No.
So once someone calls you crazy, it has a burning effect where no matter what, even if the person apologizes, says, I didn't really mean that, they, mm-hmm. you know, like from then on out, everything you do, you are going to wonder, does this make me look crazy? Does this make me sound crazy? Am I acting in a way that this person would think I'm being crazy? And it'll be applied to everyone else they meet.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, yeah. I know that from personal experience. Like, my sister knows that from personal experience, you know, and just, like, it's very similar to, like, a stigma of, like, mental health, because things are not, and when I say mental health, I don't mean necessarily the word crazy, but going back to the idea of, like, what it must have been like for Queenie growing up as a Legilimens, is if there's not conversation and there's not some kind of understanding that what you're going through and what you're feeling and what is happening to you is normal and it happens and there are other people like you, mm-hmm. you're already hypersensitive to the fact that you have something else going on. And then mm-hmm. when you, and then if you don't have that conversation to know that you're not the only person like that, the moment someone calls you crazy, it's like a confirmation of everything you ever feared and you thought, which makes it so much worse. So, I mean, it makes complete sense because Queenie, when she jumped ship, Grindelwald never called her crazy. I think it's like he calls her brilliant. I don't know if he exactly uses those terms, but I feel like that's the way he would say it to her. She has this incredible gift. And, you know, there's so much that she can do with it, which is really the way things are, should be looked at from the start. But because we fear things and we fear what we can't control, our instinct is to jump to the word crazy. Like, my family, we try not to use the word crazy just because there is, like, mental health issues in our family. And so, like, we're Spanish, so we use the word loca instead. So, like, if my mom...
It just sounds more fun, you know?
Right. So if
I'd rather be loca than crazy.
So if my mom is going on about how, like, she doesn't want to... She's like, oh, I don't want to go visit these schools with your sister because blah, 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 and it's going to be this and da-da-da. All I have to say is, Mama, you're just being loca. I'm not telling her she's crazy. I'm giving the softer alternative.
Yeah.
Because it's just that word. There's something about that physical word of, like, you're being crazy. I mean, more often it's used in the negative than the positive. And sometimes even when it is used in the positive, it's really the negative. Like, contestants on The Bachelor, if they could describe you as, like, oh my god, you're so crazy. They don't, you know what they mean. It's,
yeah.
It's,
So
that was a long tangent.
No, it was good. I kind of wanted to ask you guys what you think as far as, like, the definitions of crazy, from the mentally deranged definition to someone who's fun and will do anything for someone they love. Yay! Like, do you think that Queenie is crazy? Because there's definitely something going on with her in this movie. And Jacob keeps calling her crazy, and at certain points it's hard to disagree with him because she's making very extreme choices. So would you call her crazy? Maybe not to her face, but, like, just in general?
I don't think she's crazy. We see it's the word itself and what comes with it that really makes her snap at the end. I wouldn't say she's crazy, no, but I think that there's something going on with her where she doesn't feel accepted. She doesn't feel comfortable. It's to that point where she knows she's different, even by wizarding standards, and I think she's kind of looking for that spot of where she belongs, and it's just, it may look crazy to everyone else who doesn't understand, but that's what she's been dealing with, is people from the outside kind of looking in at her reality in a way. So, yeah, I don't know.
I would love to be a perfect person and say no, but I mean, definitely watching the film, I was like, this girl's losing it. Like, she a little nuts. What's going on there? But I hate the word crazy. Especially, you know, gosh.
Well, it does feel a little bit dismissive to call it crazy. Because, like, you can see what she's going through and you can understand to an extent what makes her do the things that she does.
Right.
But just because of, like, the connotation of the word, it just... For me, like, doesn't feel right to call it crazy, but at the same time, like, there are some mental hurdles there that she's dealing with.
Yeah.
I guess to me, the reason I wouldn't label it as crazy is it's very real. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you see what's happening with her, and it's legitimate. Like, you know, she's on her own. She just wants to be with the person that she loves.
Right, and that's not crazy.
Yeah, and she's using questionable methods to get there, but she's, you know, she's desperate at this point. And it's just, you can see why she's doing the things she's doing. And you can see that it's very, very real, very legitimate that she's feeling this mm-hmm. way. Like, crazy to me would, it makes it sound like she's making this up or it's all yeah. in her head. Which it's definitely not.
I think crazy can also happen when people are unwilling to get involved.
Yeah.
And obviously we have no idea what that really looked like. You know, like what Tina's reaction was like, how she handled any of those conversations. We have no idea what those conversations really looked like between Queenie and Jacob. But, you know, you get pressed to, you know, to quote Hercules, people do crazy things when they're in love. And there I go, using the C word. But yeah, people do crazy things when they're in love. You know, if I mean, I know I do some, classify as crazy? I do some bizarre stuff for my relationship, like the way I schedule out my time. But I know that's how it's going to work for us both to be happy and to keep us moving along. Some people would probably say it's crazy and probably think it's ridiculous and that I shouldn't even bother. But when you care.
Well, those people probably don't have successful relationships, so.
Yeah. Valid point. Thank you for my validation. Would you say she's crazy?
I would hope that if I joined the wizard Nazis, that the people who care about me would be like, hey, you're being crazy.
Right.
Like, stop it. But also, I just, what's implied about what she's been through. Like I said,
I also think she was too far gone.
Yeah. It just feels like dismissal to call her crazy. But in reality, and not to get political, but like there are reasons that people make these choices in real life too. Like,
yes.
There are reasons that people are hateful and make extreme choices and follow extreme leaders and thought leadership. And it's because of things that they've been through and things that they've been taught. And not that that excuses the behavior, but to call it crazy just kind of dismisses it and glosses over the issue. And it doesn't really help anybody move forward. So I don't think she's crazy, but I think she's making crazy choices.
I think that's fair.
My last point that I wanted to bring up was, this has to be like a really big deal for Jo to keep putting in her stories like this. So I was just wondering what your thoughts are on why this is such a theme in this universe. Maybe if there are other examples of the importance of these words that I'm not thinking of, like Lizzie brought up with Lupin. But basically just kind of like, what is she trying to say with this? What does she want us to take away? And why does she not want us to call each other cowards or crazy?
I think what's really important is that we don't ever fully understand what a person is going through. Because Petunia definitely thought Lily was crazy.
Yeah. She called her a freak. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah. She was a freak and she was crazy and insane. And she went off to wizard school. Like, and you never know what a person is going through. Because definitely Petunia never knew half. I mean, maybe she knew a little bit more, considering what we learned in Deathly Hallows and all that stuff, but she never was going to find out about, you know, all the teasing Lily went through at school and how she was the outsider. You know, the place where she should have felt normal, she was a weirdo, and then she comes home, and then she's back to being a weirdo, and she's just like a constant outcast no matter where she is, because at home she's a freak, and at school she's an M-word, like, it's, mm-hmm. I think that's something that's really universal about it. Like, no one knew what Snape was going through. I mean, that was his entire plan and his shtick, but, and people don't know what Queenie's going through, because how could you? There's no way to be a legilimens for a day and, like, pass, you know, that knowledge on to somebody. People always say, you know, to walk a mile in a person's shoes and stuff like that, but sometimes you You really can't.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it hard, because when you don't understand something, it's very easy to consider them a coward or, you know, crazy. You know, it's the same way with, like, why people stay in, like, unhealthy relationships.
Yeah.
You don't know mm-hmm. what's on the other side of the door.
So true.
And I think that's something important that she's trying to allude to.
Basically, think before you label or judge someone. And a person isn't just one word. Things are not always mm-hmm. what they seem.
Yeah, definitely. Any other thoughts on name-calling before we move on?
I think...
Bad, don't do it, kid.
The end!
I think even Newt was probably name-called a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And we all think he's wonderful and perfect, but there are lots of people he's not.
Yeah, so let that be a lesson to you, listeners. If people are calling you bad names, just remember, people called Newt names, and Jacob and Queenie, and we think they're wonderful. So...
Someone thinks you're perfect.
Yeah. We think you're perfect.
Yes.
That got really deep. I'm sorry.
All right. Let's talk about beasts.
Beasts!
So let's open up the Newt case with the chupacabra.
Yes.
Because it's adorable, even though it's menacing.
Justice for Antonio.
Ugh. Such a random thing to make a Funko out of, too, by the way. Like, weird.
Yeah, also such a random thing to, like, mercilessly kill in the first 30 seconds of the movie, but okay.
This is true. Anyways, chupacabras are blood-sucking creatures, and they have six legs and spines. They
hold on.
Actually exist.
Six legs and six spines? Is that what that means?
I don't think it's six spines, but I think it's covered in spines.
Oh, okay. Like pokey things. I literally was thinking like six backbones, and I was like, that is messed up.
Oh, no, not that kind of spine. I was like,
oh my God.
Why do you want the exact number of spines, Megan?
No, that, okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Please continue.
Oh, boy. So they actually exist in folklore prior to Crimes of Grindelwald. The story originates in Puerto Rico in the 1990s, so kind of recent folklore. Chupacabra means goat sucker, as it was rumored to be killing livestock and feeding on their blood.
No.
Yeah.
Antonio,
there's
why?
There's actually been other versions of this story, recently in Texas and New Mexico as well. And there's this really weird, pre-Beast connection to Johnny Depp, which I found... was on The Guardian. They had this article. I thought this was really strange. So while promoting his 2015 film Mordecai, Depp was a no-show for a promotional event in Japan. Insert eye roll here. but his excuse, this is where it gets interesting, he was, quote, attacked yesterday by a very rarely seen or experienced animal called the chupacabra. I fought with it for hours. They're very persistent, very mean, and I'm pretty sure it came in my suitcase. I threw him off the 23rd floor, so we'll never see him again.
Oh my God. That was...
3 years later... We see Johnny Depp throwing the chupacabra from a flying carriage.
That was some method acting.
That was 2015. There's no way he could have known about this at that point.
Right, exactly.
That's crazy.
Like he wasn't cast. So oh wait, no,
yes, he
would have been
cast.
Right? Yeah, he was cast, but like how would you ever know?
Don't give him too much credit.
If he had psychic vision to Crimes of Grindelwald at that point, then, like, I've got additional questions for him.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So I just thought that was really weird.
So my initial thought is I'm going to tweet at Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Well, that's how any situation really makes me feel.
And be like, hey, what do you know about the chupacabra?
This also seems like a great time for me to brag to our listeners that Lin-Manuel Miranda liked one of my tweets. And it was the highlight of my existence to date.
Megan almost died.
I did. It was a very close call, but I somehow pulled through.
I'm literally tweeting.
Good. If he answers, I will actually die. Like, I'll follow through this time.
Please, explain the chupacabra.
Yeah.
And also listen to Speak Beastie, and also, do you want to be on an episode?
Literally.
So, anyway, totally lost my train of thought there because I was thinking about...
And there's your Hamilton connection for today, folks.
So, I don't know, like, Antonio, I felt for him, but also he was sucking the blood out of goats, which isn't cool with me. There's a lot of layers here.
Yeah, like, why? Why do they do that? Is it so they can live? Is it because they're bored?
Probably. I would imagine it's like vampires, like...
All things that Lin-Manuel Miranda can answer, I'm sure.
Are these in Fantastic Beasts, or are they just, like, folklore? Like, are they in the book, I mean? I know they're in the movie. Oh.
I was like, what are you talking about, Megan? I don't know. I don't think they're in the book.
No. I'm looking at the lexicon, and it doesn't have, like, the ratings and stuff that it would have if it was in the book.
Yeah, because I thought it was a new creature when we got it in the Funkos and stuff.
It just says, so. A blood-sucking creature with both humanoid and reptilian qualities found in North and South America. A baby chupacabra named Antonio helped Gellert Grindelwald to escape from Ministry Aurors who had come to fetch him where he was being held prisoner, blah, blah, blah. Antonio bit the finger of an Auror named Spielman, allowing Grindelwald to steal the thestral-drawn carriage in which they were riding. For his trouble, Antonio was given a pat on the head and then kicked out the door into the Atlantic Ocean, along with Spielman.
Does he survive? Will Antonio return?
I hope so. I hope they're really good swimmers, because it doesn't say... I mean, the lexicon doesn't say that he's dead.
He's wherever Graves is.
Yeah. In the Upside Down. Well...
How's that tweet coming?
Oh, it's... Should I make it my pinned tweet? And then just, like, link him to the episode afterwards?
Listeners, if you're bored, go retweet.
Retweet!
Maybe we'll get Lin-Manuel Miranda to answer our questions about chupacabras, because...
He starts to wonder why there's a lot of people asking him about chupacabras. Maybe someone should explain.
Nah. At Lin-Manuel, hey, so what do you know about chupacabras? Their folklore originated in Puerto Rico in the 90s. It's our hashtag new case on our next episode at Speak Beastie.
Nice. You got all the info in there.
I did.
Very That's good. That's why you're Very a professional. Good.
So tomorrow, his Twitter will say, good morning. Just got a lot of tweets about chupacabras. Don't know what the sudden fascination is, but...
But as I am Lin-Manuel Miranda, amazing. And I know everything.
But I just remembered he doesn't have his Twitter right now. Dang it.
Well...
Oh, no.
Again, this episode's not coming out until the 24th, so maybe he'll have it back by then?
I'll we'll tweet at his
tweet
wife.
Him again.
There hey. You go. Question for your husband.
Hey, Vanessa.
Yeah, hey, what's
Come
good?
Come over here.
This is not getting stalkerish at
no.
all.
No.
I'm going to get blocked.
It's all right. We're
what's
good.
What's going to happen? That wraps it up for this episode. And today's podcast question, what do you think the importance is behind the themes of words like crazy and coward and their effects in the wizarding world? We'd love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or send us an email at speakbc@gmail.com. And while you're online and have nothing else to do, feel free to leave us a review on iTunes. We love getting your feedback, finding out how we can make the show stronger, and it helps us improve our ratings and, you know, just become more discoverable as a podcast so we can have more beasties in the world.
Yes.
Yay. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie, on Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, and you can also find us on Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. You can also support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/speakbeastie. We really love our Patreon supporters. You guys are awesome, and you really, really help us make this show possible.
Y'all the best!
Yeah. I'm Amy.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Megan. Case closed.